Blog Talk Radio.
Up the valley, across the river, through the school yard, in the neighborhood, the street I lived on my bike, I'd race to the mini mart, on the path through the woods, to beat the dark. If the rain would fall, I'd pedal through, the wind on my face was like a monsoon. We'll rebuild this summer home. All winter long, we'll rebuild this summer home.
It'll be ready in the spring, wrong, you beautiful thing.
We'll rebuild this summer home. Tonight you are here to share. Summer home, we'll work all winter long. We'll rebuild this summer home.
It'll be ready in the spring for all your beautiful things. We'll rebuild this summer home.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I'm looking forward to the interview. This should be great. We just want the listeners to be able to know all about Peter Bazell by the end of the show and your debut release, To Telescope, and we're going to play some music from the release and just have a good time here talking about music. And if you would like to call in, we have an open line, 646-595-2483, if you'd like to ask Peter a question. We also have a chat room going. So what's new and exciting, Peter? What's going on?
Well, Don, I live in Boston. Where are you located right now?
Right outside of Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, so we've been getting absolutely hammered by snow.
Oh, yeah.
And I was actually in Florida this past week on a Disney vacation.
Oh, wow.
With my family, and we were snowed in for 2 days, so we're able to spend a couple extra days there, and we just got back on Thursday, and it's supposed to be more snow coming, so that's really the highlight of my existence right now, if you call it that.
It's been a brutal winter. I work for some people on the East Coast in the Connecticut, Massachusetts area, and it's just you know, they had to go out and get snow rakes for the roofs and do all kinds of stuff because of the severe weather going on. But it has been, Peter, a very, very long winter. I would have to say that. Man.
Yeah, you know, so I buckled down in the winter. I have a construction company, actually.
Okay.
I have my own company. I do residential remodeling. But it slows down in the winter, so I'm able to work on music. And for me, musically, I'm just getting started to work on my next record. I have, I have all the songs written, rough sketches, probably 80% done, I would say. And I'm just getting started in my home studio to start sort of laying sort of the bed tracks for the recordings. It's an arduous process in a sense, because I do a lot of the instrumentation myself. I play the drums, which is my first instrument, actually. And, so that's where I'm at musically. And been getting out and performing lately, solo, acoustically, in the Boston area also, which has been enjoyable.
Yeah, that's good. Do you find that in songwriting, do you think like the environment or the weather or that has any influence on how you write your songs?
Yeah, I mean, that song you just played, Summer Home, that was written after I moved back to Massachusetts, which is my home state. But previous to that, I had lived in Oregon for close to 20 years in Washington. And, definitely. I mean, I was speaking of that song again, that was kind of written out of my life of starting a new family and actually being a carpenter. Ironically, that song kind of has some, I was working on these really expensive homes in New England, and I just sort of came up with this idea of a summer home. But yeah, absolutely. In the winter, it's hard not to write depressing songs.
Oh yeah.
But I'm always coming up with ideas for new material, and so I have a little. Recordings of things, and I'll go back to that and a seed of an idea of something, and I'll kind of grow from there. For sure. When I was first starting with songwriting, a lot of it was from my own personal experiences, and a lot of it still is. I mean, having my heart broken or not having my heart broken or just whatever I was doing.
Right.
As I've evolved as a songwriter, hopefully, I think that I have. I've taken influence from, I've been doing something where I watch TV and kind of follow the storyline and take notes and get inspiration from that, or a book I'm reading.
Oh, that's cool.
A lot of it necessarily, at least recently, isn't so biographical. Excuse me.
I know what you're saying, because it's like, one of the cool things about this show, and I'm going to my third year, just interviewing, songwriters from all over the world, and it's one of the most interesting things, where the creativity comes from for the songs, and it comes from so many different places, and some folks, they will tell me about how the song will, pick them. And they'll hear it, for the first time. They'll just listen to it, and then they'll compose it. And then I've talked to people that have worked very hard at constructing songs and the music and then the lyrics. And some people, it's very, I was talking to Peter about geographical. I can talk, too. Wow. So I was interviewing this one guy who said that he would go, whenever he would travel, he would just go to this certain specific area and just sit there and just look around and just kind of feel the area and then try to absorb what was going on there and just try to write from that. And I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, you got to, like you said, you got to write from your own experiences. And I would imagine, you went from, the East Coast, Massachusetts, all the way out to the West Coast, where, there's probably quite a bit of difference there in the culture and things that are going on. But I always think that's really interesting in the lyrics in the song. I mean, it's like, to me, songs have various levels to them and layers, and the lyrics make the song, to me, even though I can listen to a song musically, I don't know if I'm rambling along here, but the lyrics really jump out, and do you, Peter, when you're putting a song together, do you normally, have the music first and then put the lyrics down, or is it normally like an idea, like you were saying, you're like read a book, or how does that work out in a you know, a normal way?
Wow. Yeah, you know, I'd say all angles, John. Recently, I've been actually learning Beatles songs. I always took them for granted as a musician. My mother, ironically, when I was a kid, wasn't one somebody who listened to the Beatles. A lot of my peers, they all grew up with the Beatles. She was listening to like Van Morrison and Joan Baez in the 60s, and she thought the Beatles were kind of too commercial. So I didn't get like sort of early exposure to them. But now as an adult, I'm kind of going back to them. I actually what spurred that on is some friends wanted to do some Beatles sing-alongs. I'm like, oh, let's do some Beatles. And we opened up a Beatles songbook and I started doing the chord progressions. I'm like, this is not as easy as I thought it was. I really took it for granted, like simple chords, but the movements of them. So that's been, but all that to say is that, you know, I could take things out of, say, learning a Beatles song, like a simple move maybe that lately that I came up with the song. I was like, oh, just these two or three chords. I was like, I kind of, you know, I'm not the first one, believe me. I mean, taking, you know, a lead from the Beatles by any means. But so there's that. And, you know, there's also just thoughts, like I said, that I have. So lyrics will come occasionally. But the thing about, at least for me with songwriting, what I've learned is it's a lot of work. Like you come up with an idea and it's very, you know, small and short. For, at least for me, my songs don't come in some big dream and they're done. I mean, you know, that's how,
or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess that's how Stairway to Heaven was written. I've heard that before, but
I've never heard that.
I supposedly, that's the story, but who knows what lights up on
folklore
at this point. But, you know, I a lot of times I write my songs based off of the chords. You know, I'll come up with the, like, guitar progressions I typically write on the guitar. I've actually been trying to get away from that lately, where I want to come up with the melody first, because I think a stronger form of songwriting would be that the melody is present even before the chords are structured underneath it. So I've been working on that, you know, and going back to the Beatles again. I mean, that's how their songs are. You can just sing them in there. It's a beautiful melody. Almost every single one of them. I mean, it's been kind of blowing my mind lately. I'm just going back to their early stuff, you know. You know, but also I was in Olympia, Washington. I went to school at Evergreen State College in the early 90s. And so when the whole grunge scene came out, we weren't calling it grunge at the time. It was just what we were doing. It was just rock, you know. So I was there for close to 20 years. And so when Nirvana broke and the whole Olympia rock scene was pretty influential on how like bands like Soundgarden.
Yeah, even, Soundgarden.
Pearl Jam came up. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Soundgarden. Love them.
Yeah, that's really cool, too, to talk about. I mean, you've hit some great subjects. I mean, you're talking about the Beatles songwriting. And, like, I'm a huge, unbelievable, maybe on the edge of insanity Beatles fan. And so it's, to me, everything kind of evolves from that. But
absolutely.
I know that's not really how it is, but it to me it is. So when I listen to the songs, like you're saying, the thing that I thought was so cool about it was you had these incredible songwriters, but they weren't on the same page. McCartney was on one side, Lennon was on the other side. They would write songs. When they came together, the songs were pretty intense because they were different. Like you were talking about the rhythm and the melodies were a little different. And I know from being in bands, Peter, when a lot of times, like I grew up in the era where there were garage bands everywhere. And people loved the Beatles, but no one could play them.
Yeah, man. Exactly. And so funny. I was like, I'm going to sit down and learn how to play, like, You Got to Hide Your Love Away. And I'm like, well, the chords, no G, D, F, C, okay, no problem. And I started strumming along. I'm like, this is kind of hard. Like, I can get the tempo, but, like, you know, I'm like, oh, man. And So anyhow, that's where I'm at right now. I'm going back to the Beatles of all things, you know. Anyway, I was pretty heavily influenced by like Nirvana and stuff, but all that stuff all goes back to the Beatles, like, and then they go back to Chuck Berry. I'm like, you know, the way he played guitar, you know, that's who John Lennon was like.
Yeah, Chuck Berry, Little Richard. I always throw Little Richard in there because he had, like, you know, people talk about rock and roll and breaking through. I don't remember hearing anybody like him before.
No.
He did, you know, but you're right. It's like, and it's all these different things, which I think is really cool because, like, in your songwriting and in creativity and music, we want to talk about, you know, just music in general and maybe how, you know, that, like, you've got kids, and you mentioned your kids and how you want them to be raised with music and how important it is, like, in the schools today. I think it's really important for kids to learn creativity through music, and I think a lot of that, Peter, is being pushed aside because of budgets and things, which is pretty rough. But the creativity of music is so cool. It's like, you know, when you sit down to write a song, or, you know, when you're working, do you ever collaborate with other people, or is this basically just what you're doing?
No, actually, I have a buddy here in Boston. I met him last year. His name is Ed Gerwig, and he's just a spectacular musician. He's just, We have the same exact musical taste. We're like, yeah, Elliott Smith, Death Cab for Cutie, yeah, man, like the Smiths. You know, we were totally on the same page. And so we've been, he actually sings on my record. He does a lot of the harmonizing all the songs, and he helped arrange, you know, the vocals for me. We work together. So like, he's really my sounding board. I bring a song to Ed, and I say, hey, this is what I'm working on now. The fabulous guitar player. You know, my first instrument is drums, so I come from a drumming standpoint, and then I picked up a guitar later on, so I have, like, gaps in my guitar playing at times where Ed's like, what are you doing? But then sort of, it's kind of cool in a way. He kind of goes, that's kind of cool, but on the other hand, he's like, you do this. So, like, it's it's just, you know, I love it. So Ed and I are working a lot together, and I'm about to work with him a lot because we're going to do my next record, and he's already helped me with the songs that I've written for it a lot, and he will continue to. And also a huge person in my musical life recently is my wife's brother, Chris Zerbe is his name. He produced my record, and he played the bass on majority of the tracks, added guitar, synthesizer, and produced it. So like, I would, the record Two Telescope, my record that we're talking about here is was recorded, like, half of it in Boston and half of it in L.A. What happened with that is I was writing these songs and posting them on MySpace a few years ago, and I was doing it all on my computer in my studio. And I wasn't doing any of the drums. I was just doing a drum machine. And Chris listened to it, and he's like, you know, it sounds great, but why don't you fly out to L.A. and record the drums yourself? You know, your drumming room, just get it going. He had a studio out there. He still does, an indie studio. He's like, family rate, which is like free. I'm like, no, like, so we worked something out. I was like, I'm not gonna be free. So we tracked 15 songs a couple years ago for the record, and 10 made it, and he is majorly influential on how my music ended up. So
well, that's cool. It's you know, you're talking about, you know, with the drumming background, and I played bass, so I know that, you know, I would play really closely with the drummer, because the bass and the drummers, in my opinion, lay the bottom and play pretty much a lot of the same thing.
Yeah.
And when you were saying that Chris was playing the bass, that's to me, like, when you play, I don't know too much about drum machines, but I can listen to, like, I love to listen to live music, and I can go listen to two bands, and I can hear one with a good drummer, and it'll just knock me out.
Yeah.
It might be the same kind of band, pretty much the same level, with not that strong of a drummer, and it doesn't do that much for me. It's like, I don't know what it is, but a good drummer is like, wow.
Well, it's like the old cliche, right? A bad band with a good drummer is a good band, but a good band with a bad drummer is a bad band. I mean, it's like, it's the foundation.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
All styles of music, you know, from funk to jazz, rock, pop, you got to have the drums, and I mean, I was obsessed with the drums my whole life. I was like, you know, and I just kind of stopped over the years and really got into songwriting and guitar. But I go back to the drums all the time. And I mean, my next record, I'll be playing the drums because I'm picky. I'm like, I have worked with some drummers and they're great. I mean, they're cool, but it's like I hear the drums on my songs. I hear them in my head. That's actually going back to my songwriting process. I hear the drum, like I'm hearing the drums as I write the songs. I write them from that perspective as a drummer.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is weird. Oh, I wanted to bring one other point on this because Beatles again. So I'm obsessed with them. I mean, I'm like checking out like Paul McCartney on YouTube, and I came across this interview with him and George Martin talking about tracking for, I think it was for Sgt. Pepper, or just their tracking process. And McCartney was saying that typically the bass was added last on their tracking sessions. Like they would. He maybe would lay down like a dead bass track, but then the final bass, he would always come back in and put it in last. And I was like, kind of, I was heartened by that because that's my process. I typically will have the bass added last. I'll track, you know, the basic form of my song to like a drum machine, simple groove, knowing that I'll then add the drums and then re-add guitars and vocals and whatever else and synth. And then the bass usually ends up being the last thing. And I mean, it was sort of just out of just default because I didn't have a bass player I was working with directly. Chris was out in L.A., so I was like, well, you just put the bass in on my ass. But
okay.
It's kind of interesting to hear McCartney say that because I was like, well, you know, I like songs that are written from the bass perspective, you know, but then here's the Beatles and McCartney saying, you know, we'll have the bass last. And his bass lines are always just so beautiful and melodic and
they're incredible.
Yeah,
he started, I think, Peter. He started playing guitar, and then he was a guitar player first, I believe, and then played the bass. But the thing about McCartney, which you were talking about, the bass runs and you know the tracking with George Martin, who is an amazing genius to me. But it's like he played upside down because he was left-handed. So,
yeah,
and he. You know,
it's not upside down, John. I'm left-handed, by the way.
Yeah.
Just left-handed, man. You guys are all upside down as far as I'm concerned. I was like,
we're all, yeah, that's right. We're upside down. I forgot that part. Yeah, but it's just so amazing to me how that, you know, you just structure the song like that. And then me playing the bass, I would listen to his bass playing, and I would watch him, and singing. And his, you know, an amazing voice, an amazing song. And then, like, there was two people. There was another person playing these incredible bass runs. And I was thinking, how in the world can he do that? I mean, I could barely, well, probably never in a million years do those bass runs like that. But, I mean, that would be a great accomplishment to me. But let alone then sing like that he's singing with all the different chords that like when you're playing chords and you're strumming, and a bass, it's all notes, so it's all different. And I just would, you know, to me that was amazing when you said that because I thought, wow, you know. And he never really bragged much about his bass playing. He always said, you know, he was basically a guitar player and threw it in. But it's kind of cool how you said that about, you know, when you were putting your record together and then Chris came in and laid the bass down. And it's just how it all came together. Do you think that the sound changed with Chris helping you out if you wouldn't have had him involved? I mean, do you think with a producer, I know when I talk to people, Peter, sometimes, you know, they like to produce it themselves because they want the record to sound identical to what's in their head or, you know, to, you know, replicate it. But I always think it's interesting when you do get somebody different in there to kind of maybe move it around a little bit differently. And I think you touched on that a little bit about how Chris brought that to your music.
Yeah, you need, in my mind, you need that separation. I mean, I actually started out thinking I was going to produce this record because I have an engineering background. I studied it in college, and I got my studio, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it myself. And so I'm going to mix it, you know, I'm going to mix the record. So, but Chris said, let me do a song on the record called Silver Sky Blue Ocean, excuse me. He liked that one, so he sent a mix. I sent him the tracks. Excuse me. He sent me back the mix, and it was just like, oh, I mean, like awesome, you know, great. you're mixing all the songs and you're producing my record, okay? Like, you know, it's just having that perspective on, and, you know, I'm also like a huge fan of him as a songwriter. He's an awesome writer, and he's my brother-in-law, and so we were able to work very, you know, clearly on what I wanted. And he's a natural musician and artist, and so I feel really blessed that I was able to work with him, and I look forward to working with him on my next record. We'll do whatever we got to do. You know, I'll fly out there, or he'll come out here, and we'll figure it out.
That's great.
Like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get so, if it's just me, it just becomes such a insular thing. Like, there's no perspective. Even just working with a band, like I've had some rehearsals with a band. I've been trying to get a band going here at Boston, a full band to perform, but it's been difficult. But the rehearsals I have had, I've worked on my songs, and every time it's like, you know, a guy in the band, like, let's do this part here. And I mean, that's where it's at, you know. And I'm sure that, I'm just gonna keep going back to the Beatles this whole interview. I'm sure that's how the Beatles worked it. We didn't even talk about George Harrison's guitar playing,
gosh,
by the way.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So,
yeah, that to me, it was like, if you think about, you know, how you had McCartney, I can't even imagine it, but you had McCartney and Lennon together, and then you had this guy in the middle who absorbed all that, and then, you know, some of the greatest music I've ever heard.
Yeah. Chet Atkins Jr., you know, you listen to Chet Atkins and you're like, oh my God, like, okay, I'll never, ever be able to play guitar like that. But, you know, George Harrison just loved Chet Atkins, and especially on the early stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah. It was just, it's really cool. But it is kind of, like you were talking about, yeah, Ed, you and Ed had a lot of the same musical styles, but does Chris also share that with you, or do you guys have different musical ways of looking, or like influences? Because I think that can also be good. You know.
Yeah, what is Chris like? He's really into, like, what do I know of Chris's musical taste? Like Wilco, Flaming Lips. He likes the sort of more experimental side of indie rock.
Right.
And his music lends itself to that. But he's incredibly good at just pop harmonies and in that. You know, the funny thing, like, we didn't really write together. Like, the songwriting all came from me. That's one thing I would like to do with Chris, is write with him, but, you know, that would be great. I mean, we've done a little bit. He's done some producing on just arranging my stuff, and, like, I would, you know, send him, by the end of getting Two Telescope together, I would send him some tracks, and he'd say, you know, these aren't done, man. Rewrite it. But he wouldn't, like, rewrite it for me, even though he probably could have. He was like, just rewrite it. And, like, that was, like, a total kick, you know. I was like, and, you know, in my butt, like, okay, this ain't done yet. And I was like, so finally, like, oh, it wasn't done. So then I would, you know, rewrite the song and get it back to him. He's like, okay, yeah, you got that one. So, you know, I just love it. I love music. I don't know what to say, John. I want to do it all the time. I mean, it's like, talk about it, do it.
I don't know, you know, like a fever or something like that. It's when people usually talk about me, they usually have to throw music in there somewhere. But what we'll do, Peter, is we'll take a break and play, take a music break and play one of your songs. We'll play Silver Sky Blue Ocean. Do you want to just talk about that? I mean, the lyrics are pretty amazing. What was the influence for that? And then we'll give it a play.
That song, I wrote that song about 10 years ago, so it's kind of a 90s flair to me, 90s sound. That song, ironically talking about Chris again, my brother, at the time he had a band in Boston called Helicopter, who was a very popular band and kind of power pop, and I was listening to him a lot. And I actually wrote that song kind of listening to him and, you know, thinking, well, maybe I could present this to him. Maybe Helicopter would play it. But the lyrics were just about being lost, kind of unsure about what you're doing in your life, and kind of flailing around a little bit, and trying to get as much imagery as I could about that in the song. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's play it. This is John Chuck Radio. Our guest is Peter Bazell. You can go out on peterbazell.com. And the debut release is Two Telescope, and I know that's on CD Baby and iTunes, Peter, and it's probably on all most download. I would imagine that the listeners could go and get it.
Yep, you can find it anywhere, Amazon, my website, peterbazell.com.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll be back with the rest of the interview with Peter, and we're going to take a music break, and this is Silver Sky Blue Ocean.
Observatory in Los Angeles.
Okay.
It's where Rebel Without a Cause was filmed, but
Oh, wow.
It's just this beautiful place in LA, and I just went up there and took some photos a while back, and there's a sign, big sign that says Two Telescope, and I just like the sort of imagery of that and the thought of like, wow, Two Telescope, kind of what sort of taken. I like the idea of it sort of taking you away from your everyday reality, sort of, you know, what's out there in the world. So not much really deeper than that. It was really taken from the photo that I took. So that's going to be the cover of the record.
Yeah, that's really, it's cool. It's like, you know, it's nice to have something to make you think a little bit about it because it's like, okay, that's cool. What does it mean? And that's where it gets conversation going.
Now,
when you were putting the album together, and one of the things I always like to talk about a little bit, you know, there's always the side of music that you got to peel back a little bit and look into the business side and the promoting side, the marketing side, and those parts that might not be that much fun, you know.
Yeah.
And when if there are list, you know, we'll get music musicians that are young or they're starting off, and they'll talk to me about things, and I always say, you know, you got to start with that. You know, you've got your music, and there's going to be a lot of musicians out there, but you have to be pretty serious about that side of it. How important is that, do you think, Peter, in today's world with musicians and getting out there and making it?
Well, I mean, we don't live in a vacuum. I mean, you can, as a musician, very easily, I guess. You know, that was a big thing with me when I did this record. I'm like, oh, what is this going to be, like a vanity project, you know, meaning like nobody, first of all, nobody knew who I was before I did this record. This is my debut record. I had, you know, some experience with my old band back in Olympia, but that was years ago. You know, we played hundreds of shows. We opened up for like the Posies and,
oh, wow,
and Screaming Trees. I was a drummer in the group. The band was called Frequency DB. So, I mean, I saw that side of it. I mean, we played in front of thousands of people. And then I came out to Boston and I started a family, you know, and I did that for about 5 years, and I'm still doing it. I mean, I will do it for the rest of my life. But, I mean, the point was is I was changing diapers, and we had young kids. You know, my girls are a little older now. And I didn't want to stop my music, so I just kept continuing to write, and I decided I'm going to do my own record. I needed to get it out there somewhere, and unfortunately we have Facebook now and Twitter and I guess MySpace. I don't know, MySpace is kind of gone now, but I mean, one of the things I did was just you know, I decided I was going to spend some time with a some type of publicity company that does online publicity. So I worked with a company out of Brooklyn, New York, called REL Publicity, R-E-L-P-R, and did like a online campaign with her for 4 months and her company, and it was just completed in December. It was really wonderful and a learning experience on just how to get myself out there and in front of people as a musician online, especially, and to get out and perform live. You know, through that I got out and perform live and will continue to, but it's really the last thing that I'm interested in as a musician, but it's also what you have to do. I mean, you have to set time aside to do that, and so I do. I spend time on Facebook, you know, saying I'm doing this and that, and reaching out to people. Just today, for example, I'm sending out a CD to a local record company here in Boston that, you know, I was looking, you know, for submissions. You know, I would like to not have to self-release my next record. I would prefer to have some help, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but in this day and age and environment, you know, that's more often than not, that's what indie musicians are doing, or whatever that definition of indie musician is anymore. Aside from that, it's also just, it's amazing when you get out there how many musicians they are and how many bands and how many people. You start to get just, at least for me, I started to just get like overwhelmed by that thought, you know, but then I kind of put that aside. It's like, this is my vibe. This is what I'm doing. I believe in what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. And the whole point of it is to, you know, is to reach out and connect with people.
That's a very good point. Yeah, what you said. Yeah,
yeah,
the connecting, sharing your music with people. It's got to feel good, though, Peter. I know you said you do a lot of solo things now, you know, and you're talking about getting a band together, and the solo thing. It's got to be rewarding to take your music, you know, your personal music out and play it and see how people react to that.
Well, you got to put yourself out there. I mean, that's the whole point, is you're putting, and you talked early on in the interview about music comes from a feeling that somebody has. That's all what it is. I mean, you're trying to connect with people on an emotional level to get them to feel something. If they're not feeling anything, they're not going to be interested in what you're doing. And where does that feeling come from? Well, it comes from the craft of performing and writing a song well, which if you're a musician that's impassioned by this, which I am, I want to continue to learn and get better at it to make, because the whole point of doing that is to connect with somebody. It isn't just to play the song in my bedroom, you know, by myself in the garage somewhere. It just, for me, it isn't. I long for that connection. Now, aside from that, what happens, which I don't enjoy, but I'm still trying to wrestle with it, but the concept of it's all about me. Like, you have to, like, put yourself out there and, like, look at me. Aren't I so great? That's where I come back to, like, the vanity singer. Is this all just an ego exercise? Oh, I'm going to up on stage. Look at me singing the song. Aren't I great? I hate that aspect of it. But, you know, and being a drummer was kind of funny because I was always hidden, kind of hide behind the drum set. And being the drummer in the band was just the coolest gig ever, I have to say. I miss it, you know, because now I'm the singer-songwriter guy, whatever that means. But, like, being a drummer is just, like, you're just cool. You're, like, they're the guys that are worrying about things up front. And I just get to be cool and play the drums, man. Miss that.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that, too, because when you were playing with Frequency DB and you're sitting back playing the drums, and now it's totally different because now it is Peter Brazell, it is you, and people are coming to see you, and you have to, I mean, if you, like you said, the guy's out front, now you're the guy out front, and it's like, it is kind of crazy. I've never experienced quite like that, but I remember playing, and it is also addicting to me. I mean, when you play and you see people react, it can be not the reaction you want, but hopefully it is. But yeah, it's got to be a little. I was going to ask about that when you first started, doing it, the solo thing. How was that for you? I mean, did you was it a transition? Where you thought, oh, this is okay. I don't have any problem doing this, or was like, oh wow, you know.
Massive stage fright, like just like shaking in my boots. I was like, what the hell am I doing? Excuse me. I'll just sweat on the radio, I'm sure. But I was just like, just recently, even over the past couple months, John, I've gotten better. I mean, I had a few gigs recently that were just like duds, like, but then just like a few weeks ago, I did a show and I was like, yeah, this is what it feels like. This is good. I'm making a connection with the people. I'm really putting myself out there. And aside from that, I'm just standing up there with an acoustic guitar, you know, singing, and which is like a whole nother thing. I'm not even like with a band, you know, which I would love to be, but it's been an arduous process to get that going. So the solo acoustic guy is who I am right now. And my music doesn't really, I never envisioned my music that way. I mean, if you listen to the record, I'm trying to create like rock music or something, you know, I'm not solo acoustic.
I was going to ask, when you were writing the songs that you put together on Two Telescope and the ones that you play live, when you wrote those, did you write that, you know, for a band experience, or did you write? Were there any that were written for a solo experience?
No, definitely all band. And so then now I'm like, I go back to the record and I'm like, I need to play these with an acoustic guitar live. So I'm like relearning the songs and sort of the approach to them, and which has actually been great. Like I kind of honed in an approach to each song and threw in some new material. So I have a nice set list now of acoustic of material, which it's great. I mean, the acoustic guitar with just the vocals is such a beautiful accompaniment, and when you do it right, it really is really lovely. And so it's been a great learning experience for me, and I'll continue to do it. I got a gig coming up in Boston, this club called Hennessy's, February 17th. I have a live acoustic show for Thursday night in Boston.
Yeah, that would be great. It would be really good to hear you sometime if you ever come out this way. When you play live and you're in your like you're going to do at Hennessy's, do you have to adjust sometimes? And I listen to different musicians, and I know that in clubs or when they're playing in bars and clubs, it can be kind of difficult at times to get people's attention because there's a lot of stuff going on, you know. And some people are listening, and some people aren't. Some people are really loud. It's like, do you ever have to? Does that ever bother you any? You know what I mean? You ever like want to throw something at them?
No, I'm up there just trying to to figure out what I'm doing and just try to make a connection any way I can. And so if I see people in the audience that are paying attention, I'll hone in on them. There's always going to be the folks that are just there to just drink and shoot pool and do whatever they can do, visit with their friends. And it depends on the vibe of the night or what club you're in. If you're in a club where people are there to see music, then they're gonna be quiet and listen. And if not, you know, that's fine. You know, if somebody doesn't like what I'm doing, you know, you can't please everybody in anything you do in life. So
true.
I just, you know, hey, you just gotta do what you do, and that's it. And you know, whether it stinks or not, or you know, sometimes. Sometimes somebody's perspective is that sucks, or your perspective as the performer, at least my head trip is like, this all sucks, you know, I'm terrible, you know, and I go through that, and then I'm like, okay, not terrible, I do have something to offer, you know, so.
No, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take another music break and play another song from the album. Let's play Be My Valentine and talk about that. Before we play it, Peter, anything you'd like to set that up for our client?
But that song was written about me just completely getting my heart broken by a woman who I thought I would just be together with forever. I wrote that song about 10 years ago. I mean, my record is kind of funny. Like, there's some songs that are written 10 years ago, and there's some songs that are written recently, and then, like, there's sort of a gap in between. So that one was written with the hopes that she would hear the song and be like, fall back in love with me. And I was so desperate. That was totally from a personal experience and just so desperate. And if you ever would hear like the original version of the song, like the very first, it is just pathetic. I was just so like, I was just so crushed. But the song has evolved and now it's done. It's here.
It's out there. When you play it, you play it in your live sets.
I don't actually play this one acoustically. It's funny, like I tried to, and it doesn't really come across. Like I ended up adding a lot of synthesizer to this song, and you know, I might bring it back out again, but you know, I don't know. This I was working on it, and it just didn't. I wasn't feeling the connection to it, even though I absolutely love the song. You know, I'm very proud of it. Happy it finally has arrived. This was actually one of the songs that I had to rewrite. I sent it to Chris when we were doing the record. He's like, "That song ain't done." So I had to like do another rewrite on it very recently. The song has actually totally tortured me throughout my songwriter.
Well, let's play it. This is "Be My Valentine," Peter Bazell. This is from his debut release, Two Telescope. And we'll be back after this song with the rest of the interview.
You're only real if I think about you too long. Other than that, you don't exist at all. Your cause is empty, and I am still here. It's so sad how you're wrong, you were broken.
That's Be My Valentine. That's from Two Telescope, the debut release from Peter Bazell. This is John Talk Radio, and Peter is our guest tonight. Peter, is there a song that you play now in your acoustic sets that's your favorite when you're playing it, that you like to play the most? Is there one that stands out when you're doing your acoustic gigs?
Yeah, I open it with The Devil Took Our Souls. I like that song. It's just a three chord song I'm very proud of. I like the whole concept of it, and it's easy to play. I play it in almost every acoustic show I do. It's the first song on Two Telescope.
And when what stands out in that song to you? I mean, and another thing I was going to ask you, when you wrote that, did you feel like that's a pretty cool song when you were writing it? I mean, sometimes people write songs and then it grows on them. Did you know right off the bat that was a pretty cool song to you?
Yeah, I like the idea of that song being only three chords and making a song really work out of three chords. I mean, AC/DC could do it, so why can't I? You know, but
there you go.
So, awesome band, but yeah, I mean, that song really kind of organically just created itself. That was one of those songs that just sort of came out, and I never really had to do much to it, which I was really like, it was one of those songs where I almost feel like I kind of grabbed it out of the, you know, the universe or something. I don't know, like, you were talking earlier about how, where songs come from. I don't even know where they come from. That song is actually pretty autobiographical. Hey, I got it out this time. That was written about being in my old band, Frequency DB, and hanging out with my my buddy John, the bassist, and we would. So the whole song is totally a true story. I mean, every word in it is taken from our life experience, and I also like. So I literally like the lyrics and the melody and how it flowed. Chris liked that one a lot right off the bat. My producer, Chris, was like, "That's a great song. That's your first song on the record." And I was like, "Okay." I didn't really realize that until he said it, and I was like, "Okay." And what else do I want to say about that song? Oh, I like the arrangement of the song. It has sort of a unique arrangement within just a simple chord structure. You know, there's not the typical verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. You know, rock. Pop structure. It kind of has its own. It works in its own construction. Like sometimes that doesn't work, but I was proud of that as a songwriter that it worked, and just the simplicity of it. I really like the simplicity of melody and chord structures if that can work. Yeah. So.
And it's got to also when you're doing something in a solo gig and. It's got to feel comfortable vocally. I know that, you know, I've heard people when I go hear live shows and I can, some songs sound very comfortable to them vocally and some don't. And I'm thinking, I wonder why, if they're trying different things. But, you know, when you're singing your song and you like that and it's just got to feel good to hit that range and just let it flow. You said it's not a real complex song. But it doesn't always have to be that way. To me, it's like some of my favorite songs are, you know, like Neil Young is, I don't think any of his stuff is very complex, but it's just good, you know, music. And so that's pretty cool. I like the idea of, you know, you being in the band and you know, the support of the band, and then now it's, you know, you're out front, and that's got to really feel good. But you also mentioned, Peter, that you're trying to get a backing band.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how will that change? Will that change anything of what you're doing? I mean, you're playing the solo songs and you're picking those songs particularly for, you know, clubs and things like that. So if you get a band together, how will that change? And the new songs that you're putting together for the next album, mm-hmm. Do you have any of that in mind to play with a band or solo, or how's that working out?
Man, I think you and I communicated about the Black Keys on Facebook.
Yeah.
I just want to get a drummer. That's it. If only I was half a guitar player by those guys. But, man, you know, I love the sound of just the simplicity of the guitar and the bass. My music really isn't really anything like the Black Keys. But the drummer, I really like the drummer style in Black Keys. So what am I trying to say?
It's amazing, isn't it, how that they connect
yeah.
with two people.
God.
Yeah, it's like the White Stripes, the Black Keys.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I talked.
That's
blown my mind lately. Go ahead, what?
Well, there's a musician I interviewed, Amanda Zelina from Canada, and she plays a bunch of blues acoustic stuff, but she put together a band, and she calls it Coppertone, and she just plays Peter the guitar and has a drummer. And it sounds really, really cool.
Yeah,
so it's different. I mean, I don't know how you get the guys get the bass sound going, but it sounds good to me. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of old school. I mean, I like the bass. I mean, you know.
Yeah, we don't want to exclude the bass players.
Absolutely not, man. I mean, you know, those guys now are touring with a bassist. They have a bassist now and a keyboardist and the Buckies. But, I mean, what can I say about that? I have some guys I've worked with, and they're wonderful, but everybody's busy. It's not as easy. When I was younger and a teenager, and we all just were like gung-ho. This is all we did. It was just rock. Now, as I've gotten older, it's more of sort of a scheduling fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Timing.
No doubt.
So I'm working at it, and my focus is kind of shifting now, though, just recently. I'm going to really focus on doing my next record, I think, and I'll continue to get out and perform solo. And I think it'll evolve eventually. Once people get to know me a little more and who I am, I'll be able to draw in some musicians that are into what I'm doing, and I can get them involved and, you know, pay them, you know, accordingly for the gigs. I mean, that's my goal. It, you know, it's just going to evolve. In a lot of respects, I'm just getting started here with this, and, you know, especially in Boston. You know, I've only been gigging in Boston since, you know, the fall, you know, so.
Well, we're running out of time, Peter. It's just been great talking to you. I appreciate you coming on the show today. It's been
Thanks
great.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, John.
So the best
Thanks
of luck.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the best of luck to everything, and with your, you know, getting together the new album and your gigs and stuff like that. So we'll keep in touch, Peter. Thanks a lot for being on. And next week we'll have Chris A. on, who wrote a book called A Vulgar Display of Power, The Courage and the Carnage of the Alborosa Village. It's Dimebag Darrell, the story of when he was shot and killed in Columbus, Ohio. So that should be an interesting show next week. But thanks, Peter. We appreciate it. We're going to go out with The Devil Took Our Souls. And you have a great evening, and we'll talk to everybody later.
Thank you, John.
Johnny at the bar again, and I'm wearing a halo of sin. We're drunk and high. It's time to take us home again.